doesn't matter.
Blog Talk Radio.
Tune in to the Del Walmsley Radio Show.
Tune in every Monday at 8 a.m., Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and Fridays at 5 p.m., and Thursdays at noon, right here on KKNW.
And let's go ahead and take a look now to alternative top weather outlook for Wednesday. Well, after those morning clouds burn off, we'll see partly sunny skies today. High temperatures not looking too bad, around 71, 72 degrees. Tonight, increasing clouds, though. Low temperatures dropping down to about 53. For early Thursday morning and most of Thursday, actually, clouds and light rain showers. High temperatures scaling back to about 66. Clouds and rain will hang for Thursday night. Lows down to about 46. For Friday and running up into the weekend, more clouds and light rain showers expected. High temperatures in the upper 50s to low 60s.
Hey there, it's Kristen Rao Finkbeiner. I am the host of a great show you're going to want to listen to called Breaking Through. It's here on Mondays at 5 a.m. We tackle the top topics facing our nation with experts from across the country that bring news to you in Washington State to talk about how your voice matters, how you can best be heard, and how you can make a difference. We're on right here on Alternative Talk, 1150 a.m. at 5 a.m. on Monday. Breaking Through. Be there.
Alternative Talk 1150. We're on your radio at 1150 a.m. We're on your HD radio at 98.9 channel 3. We're on the web at 1150kkaw.com. Streaming live audio and video as well as MP3 archives of many of our shows.
So many ways to listen.
And now, we're on your smartphone or tablet. Download our free app in the Apple App Store or Google Play and take Alternative Talk 1150 anywhere you go.
So many ways to listen.
The views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of KKNW, its management, or other advertisers. This program is sponsored by Dr. Pat Vasily and Transformation Talk Radio.
Had enough of the been there, done that ideas? Tired of too much talk and so little action? Rewind now and welcome to Transformation and Change Radio with Dr. Kathy Obear, where the vision of true equity, inclusion, courage, and purpose meet powerfully. Dr. Kathy delivers a dynamic, engaging conversation and the most authentically brave dialogue on air today. This hit show will challenge you to explore current issues of diversity, equity, and inclusion and deepen your capacity to choose courage to speak up to greater inclusion in everything you do. Fasten your seatbelts and accelerate your effectiveness to become a powerful change agent in your life, community, job, and society. Imagine true equity and inclusion and get the tools to really manifest your vision. No frills, no fluff, just really powerful, good stuff. Transformation and Change Radio starts now.
Welcome, listeners. I'm Dr. Kathy Obear, Center for Transformation and Change. I could not be more excited to have you all meet Dr. Lee Goodson, President and CEO of Tulsa Community College. I first met Lee, a few years ago when you were in a presidential Aspen development program. You've been president there since 2014. That's actually longer than I'm reading that the president's lifetime is at many campuses. I'm so excited to talk about how do you lead, empower, amplify organizational change, equity, inclusion, especially in these times of dual pandemics, times of racial reckoning. Lee, you have this long experience, faculty, college administrator, president, Oklahoma particularly, but you also were a school board member, board of directors of YMCA, Oklahoma Innovation Institute. I was particularly excited about your pipeline for students for STEM, so we may circle back to that. What I'm most excited about is people who are in complex organizations who are already senior leaders or aspiring to be, to really hear some of your insights and wisdom about change management, having equity, inclusion, social justice lens in all you do. So thank you so much, because I can only imagine what your schedule looks like these days.
Well, Dr. Obear, I am so glad to be here today, and I just want to thank you for the invitation. So really exciting.
Woo-hoo.
And it is a sunny day here in Oklahoma. And so we're glad that spring is here, and we're hopefully getting ready for a great summer where we can maybe start easing out of this pandemic, if you will. But we will see how that goes.
Mm-hmm. Well, talking about transformation and change, there are things that hopefully we'll take into the future and not go back to the way we were, especially around equity and inclusion. But before we deep dive in, could you just let people know a bit more about yourself and maybe how you're doing in this time of pandemic, renewed demands for racial reckoning, equity, inclusion?
Sure. So I'm in my 30th year in higher education. I know. I counted it up the other day. I was just like, because I had a friend that was getting ready to retire, and she said, I've been in higher ed almost 40 years. And I was thinking, how long have I? And it's been 30 years. And so I've had a lot of different roles in higher education. I started off as a traveling admissions counselor. So for those of you that have gone to college, you probably met with an admissions counselor, and they helped you figure out how to work through that process. And that's how I started out. And I was at Fort Hays State University in western Kansas at the time. And I would leave on Sunday nights and travel to the eastern half of the state because that was my territory, and I'd come home on Thursdays. And I loved that role. I would visit anywhere between 4 and 6 high schools a day, and I got to know all 120 high school counselors in the area, and it was just, it was fun. It was a great way to enter higher education, and there's a lot of enthusiasm around that role. And so I just really enjoyed it. My career, if you will, has been just progressively responsible, and I've been really lucky to have a lot of different experiences in different types of institutions. So Fort Hays State is a regional state institution. Then I went to Oklahoma State's main campus in Stillwater, Oklahoma. Then I was still with Oklahoma State at the medical school in Tulsa, and there was also a branch campus, and I did some work with them. And then I came to TCC as the president, and this is my first experience at a community college, and I've been president for 7 years now. And certainly my work as a school board member helps with that. And so it's been great to take some of my experience and apply it to this role and learn so much about community colleges and what our purpose is here. And it's not just access. It's access and completion is what we've been really working on here at TCC over the last 7 years. And TCC has a long history of and a great foundation here in the community. And so just so much has been here to build on. In terms of the pandemic, I think it's been hard for everybody. I haven't spoken with a single president that feels like this has been easy or feels like it's been anywhere near normal. The word I hear from a lot of my colleagues across the country is exhaustion, fatigue. At first, I think we were experiencing a lot of panic and crisis, and then as things went on, then we developed a sense of urgency after we got out of the spring semester and we realized fall was actually coming. And now I think people have felt through this last school year, the words I would use would be, it's been a slog. We've been waiting. You know, we're always waiting for the new data about the number of cases in our community. It's been slow yet fast. At the same time, we've had to make a lot of decisions very quickly, and yet we still don't feel like we're fully out of it. People want to return to normalcy, but there's parts of it they don't want back, and so nobody really knows what that looks like because different people want to return to different ways of living. And then I think finally we've read in the papers, all kinds of newspapers, local newspapers, national newspapers, that it's been sort of a depressing time because you can't see your future necessarily. And I think that's in some ways entire institutions can relate to our students, if you will, because our students want to be able to see their future. And that's us helping students see their future is how we help them become successful. And as institutions, we're trying to see our future. And so collectively, we spend a lot of time communicating and trying to remain positive. And at the same time, we've had to make a lot of adjustments that have created a lot of need for change. And with that, then you have a lot of change management that comes with that. So, and I know we're going to talk about that a little bit later, but that's just sort of a snapshot of where I've been and where we are now. I am optimistic. I think while the news is telling us that vaccinations are slowing down, I think as people continue to see more people get the vaccination and do well with it, I think the adoption of it will continue to proceed. And so I'm really hopeful that I don't believe we've given up at all. I think it's just the progress is slowing a little bit, but I think there's a critical mass of people that are ready for us to get to the next round of normal.
Why don't we stay here a bit? Because change management, I mean, before your first 6 years, you were doing incredible change management. In this time of pandemic, racial reckoning, and other EDI emphasis. So what, in general, what are some of the more specific ways you've been leading, empowering, amplifying, holding people accountable in this time of, especially these last 15 months, and as you anticipate moving into summer, and then you all are in a progressive back in person, am I remembering right?
We are. We are at a progressive back in person. In fact, we just now opened up all of the entrances to our buildings. Before, we only had a couple of entrances open on each campus. Some campuses only had one entrance open. We have four campuses across the community. And so this summer, we will have classes back to back, whereas before, we used to require a full hour in between each class so we could clean that room. But the cases are just low enough in the community that we feel safe with that. We'll continue to have students mask, I think, at least through the summer. I'm hearing from our health officials that we may see more in the fall, and there may be a seasonal aspect to COVID, and we just got a briefing on that earlier today. So there's a lot left to learn as we proceed with this, but back to the change management piece sort of and how have we gone through this? I think it's been communicate, communicate, communicate. We knew right from the beginning that our students that had the least amount of resources would be the ones that had the most difficult time navigating COVID. And what we realized right off the bat is that they didn't have internet access. A lot of our students didn't have internet access. And of course, our school was not the only one with that challenge. Our public schools across the community, it wasn't just our urban district. It was many of our districts across the community. I think it's deceptive for people. You think if it's a suburban district, they automatically have the resources to have everything they need to be able to be remote or whatever resource the student needs, and that's not necessarily the case. And so I think as our population continues to grow and diversify, the needs of our students become more diverse in all parts of our community. So we had to tackle the internet access first. We checked out some hotspots. One creative measure we took is we put Wi-Fi hotspots in the parking lots. And so so a student could drive up in their car and go to class via the Zoom class, which we call online live. And so we took some measures to help with that. But then we also, in the summer, we said we have to be open. Campus has to be open. Even though all the classes are remote, we must be open so that students that don't have a computer or Wi-Fi access can come to campus. And we just progressively created more and more resources. What we didn't have right at the beginning was just a switch we could turn on to make that possible. But as we've gone through the pandemic, we've been able to prioritize that even more. I think communicating with faculty, staff, and students at every turn has been really important to our success during the pandemic. We started off with the TCC Today, where we published a newsletter every day. Every day. And it was scrolling. So we would add articles to it at the top, and it was a scrolling newsletter. But we just really stayed on top of the communication to make sure that people were informed about different things. And then I think when as a country we experienced the murder of George Floyd, I think that was something that was really difficult for us because our students of color just needed a level of support. It was harder to, I feel like we were successful in supporting our students and our faculty and staff, all of us, because I think it was a heartbreaking event for so many. And but it was hard because we weren't in person. And for some people, I think that isolation made it just that much harder. And so we did experience that. And we've been working on that through our Division of Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion, and just making sure that our support and our programming for students is really accessible. And I've been really proud of what our team has done in that area and how our faculty and staff have been engaged. So
the daily newsletter, I mean, talk about increasing capacity and stress for the folks doing it. My guess is you also had open forums. I was talking to another president.
We did have open forums.
And my guess is you're continuing, or at least what would you recommend as folks are moving into summer?
Mm-hmm.
How do we continue having people thinking about racial justice, equity, inclusion, preparing for fall,
mm-hmm.
classroom, inclusive classroom services, while we're also trying to have time for folks to 15, 16 months, the stress, the high anxiety. I can't imagine how people are going to...
Just the Zoom fatigue alone, the toll that just the Zoom fatigue alone takes. But I think what we've done here at TCC, and it's started to move the needle in a pretty significant way, but I don't want to say that we have all of our challenges solved. I think every institution has challenges around... a variety of things, including relations of all different populations. And so I don't want to minimize that work is never done, that your diversity, equity, and inclusion work is never done, because it's also always evolving, right? And so I think what we've done over the last, I guess probably 5 years, we worked in a program with the Center for Urban Education out of USC, and we were able to really take a deep dive into our data and disaggregated our achievement data with our students, and we were able to take that data and really center programming around what problem are we trying to solve, rather than having programming that was just informative in nature or educational, if you will. We really took our programming, and it was about solving the equity gap, bringing the achievement gap together, and setting the same goals for all students, not having different goals for one set of students over the other. And as we've been going through this pandemic, we've been keeping that data front and center all the time. And that's been something that's really powerful, and it's something that people can really, it's tangible, and they can hang on to it. And I think that's been something that's been really helpful for especially our faculty in the classroom in understanding the challenges our students go through. Our faculty know our students really well, and oftentimes they're the ones sharing with us what the challenges are for our students, particularly our students of color and our students that are low income, first generation. And we would have some listening sessions or a faculty meeting, particularly with academic affairs, and the faculty would say, listen, here's the problem I am challenged with. I have a student that only has access to the internet from 8 to 5 every day, yet I need them to be able to engage at a different time. And so we'll have that. We had one student who actually she, talk about innovative, her bus ride to work was an hour and a half from one end of our community to the other. She scheduled herself to attend class on her iPhone, on a phone, either an Android or an iPhone, I guess, while she was riding her bus for that hour and a half.
Because they had internet.
Because they had internet on the bus, right.
So I'm loving all these systemic changes in the conversation staff and faculty to just on a dime, urgent, have to make change. What I also know you're doing at TCC and other places is the skills of faculty to do inclusive classrooms, difficult conversations. So it's not only the structure, but the actual skill development of your staff and faculty to have an EDI lens. And change management to get folks to change how they're doing advising, career, how they're doing teaching, how they're doing admissions. We have about maybe 3 or 4 minutes before we'll go to a break.
Mm-hmm.
Just, what's your advice to presidents to move to how do we help individual and collective groups that realize you need to change how you're interacting, how you're planning, what your services are, and it's not just the system of the whole campus?
Well, you can't preach. You can't preach your way to closing the equity gap. You have to share the data. You have to, you know, what environment are you trying to change? You're trying to change the academic environment so that the equity gap can close at that point rather than having to wait for it to close in the workplace, right? And so sharing data, talking about best practices. We have annually a program called Culturally Responsive Pedagogy.
So good.
So we have a variety of national education experts that mm-hmm. come in and have sessions, and we have plenary sessions, and we have smaller breakout sessions that help our faculty, and really faculty across the state, because we invite all of our colleagues from across the state. We have a donor that pays for it, so we can invite as many people as can fit into the banquet hall. And we even hosted it virtually this last year. But just meeting them where they are. This is how faculty learn how to teach. They learn through understanding the pedagogy and helping them in the language that they usually speak. And so just understanding the differences and really creating a safe place to talk about what happens in the classroom.
I love it. So it's not only here's our vision of an inclusive, full breadth of differences, but particularly anti-racist classrooms, campus, the why, and then tools and skills, good practices, and I'm sure
right.
they're sharing it in their departments. Here's my wonder. How close are you finding other presidents, their willingness to take that next step, in my opinion, to say, and then here are the competencies that we want faculty to have, staff to have, leaders to have, to create truly inclusive campuses, classrooms, close the achievement gap. And we're going to begin to put those into hiring, performance mm-hmm. management. We've been doing professional development, and we're moving in that direction so that how close do you think, Camp, and I know you don't speak for all presidents. Especially,
no, not at all.
But what's your guess?
I think everybody's in a different place. Everybody's in a different place. And I think all presidents, so I'm not really answering your question, but I think it depends on the environment and it depends on how far they are in their work. Pathways has really only been going on for about 20 years. That's not very long in the history of higher education. Pathways was really created to close the equity gap, not only from a students of color standpoint, but also rural and urban, and suburban and urban. And so I think everybody's in a different place. I have good friends from all over the country, and they can take it on differently based on their community. And so there's no magic identifier. And while that's kind of a non-answer, I think it's also something that presidents can hear and say, okay, I'm not necessarily behind because I can only go where my community wants us to go. And I can lead us there through education and through pedagogy. But if you try to go too fast, you'll take five steps back.
And that's what I'm finding is some places are ready to say, oh, yeah, let's have a community conversation about what are the competencies we want our students to have so that they're career ready and community leader ready.
Mm-hmm.
Therefore, staff, faculty, administrators, some places are starting with leaders saying, here's what I'm moving towards. These are some competencies that I'm committed to. How about let's talk as a leadership team? And so I appreciate meeting people where they are. We probably have just like a minute before we're
going to Well, and the competencies aren't unique, right? They're just good practices. But the difference is our first generation, many of our students of color, students that may not have the resources, they don't have that support at home. So we're really talking about students that don't have as much support at home or whose families may not have as much experience navigating the educational system because it's complicated. And it doesn't need to be that complicated. We can simplify it so that students can focus on what's happening in the classroom rather than everything else outside the classroom.
When we come back, we're going to continue the conversation with Dr. Lee Goodson. Could you share a bit about where people could find you? If people listening are like, oh, I have a president that may want to talk to you, or I'd love to learn more. So,
I'm at Tulsa Community College in Tulsa, Oklahoma, and our website is tulsacc.edu.
Fabulous, and I'm Dr. Kathy Hebert, Transformation Change Radio. You can find lots of open free resources, drkathyhebert.com, especially /resources around dismantling racism in organizations, creating true anti-racist organizations, white accountability groups, and there's some resources on the webpage. We will come back in just a few minutes to continue the conversation with President Lee Goodson, Tulsa Community College. Thank you so much.
Hi, I'm Patricia McNair, host of Divine Guidance with Patricia, and I'm here to help you live a more authentic, spiritually connected life. Join me every first and third Wednesday at 9 a.m. Pacific on TransformationTalkRadio.com. Being who you are in everyday life is the key to unlocking soul wisdom within that our whole self already knows. Get ready to embrace your spiritual, mental, and emotional well-being, your whole being. Discover your gifts and strengthen your connection to spirit. We will explore earth guidance, divine truth and love, past life lessons, and so much more. So listen in to Divine Guidance with Patricia and join in your personal adventure to triggering, opening, validating, and being all that you are. For more information about me, visit divineguidance.earth.
Stuck in a roundabout of dysfunction? Stop circling around difficult issues and find out what's been holding you back. Learn how to speak your truth to power with host Dr. Kathy Hebert. Create real change with smart tools and smart strategies. No frills, no fluff, just life-changing conversations to help get you where you want to be. Extend your reach and become an agent for real change with Kathy Hebert. For more information on Kathy and her work, please visit drkathyhebert.com. That's drkathyhebert.com.
Transition, simultaneously the most difficult and vital part of the human experience. Without change, how would we grow? Tune in to Grounding Into Your Radiance with Stacey Barber every second and fourth Thursday at 9 a.m. Pacific on TransformationTalkRadio.com. Step into your truth and allow the light into your life. For more information about Stacey and her services, visit StaceyBarber.com. That's Stacey, S-T-A-C-I-E, Barber.com.
Tune in to The Truth Is Funny with Colette Steffen each Wednesday at 8 a.m. Pacific, 11 a.m. Eastern on TransformationTalkRadio.com. This hit show will have you thinking outside the box and riding the wave of infinite potential. Join Colette on the Higher Self Network, inspiring listeners to shine their brilliance and ensure success while roaring with laughter as they recognize the humor of the giant cosmic joke. Visit TheTruthIsFunny.com. We'll be right back.
Healing has a ripple effect. One person's healing affects everyone around them. This is where the power of sharing our stories can be so important. Tune in to Playing on the Edge Radio with Megan Edge each month on Transformation Talk Radio as Megan provides you with ways of sustaining radical and powerful changes in your life. Enact the power of radical change. To find out more about Megan Edge, visit her website at meganedge.ca.
Welcome back to Transformation Change Radio. I'm Dr. Kathy O'Bear, and so excited to continue talking to Dr. CEO and President Lee Goodson, Tulsa Community College. We left off talking about leading change, change management, and my gut says that presidents are always juggling. Every moment, there might be 20 considerations. What can I say? Is someone recording it? How do I navigate? How do I plant a seed?
We certainly have a lot of constituents, a lot of varied constituents. I would say anybody in a public service position has a lot of constituents. And certainly here in Tulsa, Oklahoma, it's no different. We've got the chamber. We've got legislators. We've got, most importantly, our students, our faculty, our staff, the people that really make this place run. We've got our board, we've got our K-12 partners, our university partners. Oklahoma's just it's a fabulous state, and it is actually very diverse. We're what I would consider a fairly conservative state, and at the same time, we celebrate a lot of diversity. We have per capita more Native Americans in the state of Oklahoma, I believe, than any other state. And we are the tribal headquarters for several recognized tribes. And it's a really big part of our culture here. And so we talk about that a lot. And then also we are commemorating the 1921 race massacre this year, which was the most significant racial violent event in the history of the United States. And so we're really facing that and recognizing it. And, we have public officials from the governor all the way to the superintendent of our K-12 system that are really leading and making sure that we are recognizing that. And so we face our history with all the openness and listening and retelling of the history that we can, so that we make sure and embrace it and move forward in a healthy way. And then it's a great agricultural state, and I would say in any agriculture state, and I think of a lot of states that are in the central time zone, right? I call it the heartland, where you are, Kathy. Some people call it the High Plains, right? Everything south of Denver down to the Texas Panhandle is the High Plains. And so, but even in an urban area like Tulsa, just 20 minutes away or sometimes 15 minutes away, you're in a rural school district. So we have students that come from really concentrated urban areas right here in Tulsa. And we have employees, and the same come from 20, 25 minutes away, where they're in a very small school that may only have 50 or 100 students graduating in each class. And then you have a suburban district that has 12 or 1,300 students graduating in their class. So we have a very diverse population here in Oklahoma. And so you're right. You started off the question with how careful presidents are when they talk. And I think that's just a skill that you develop when you're a public official, because you want to keep your doors open and you want to work with everybody, because that's the only way to really benefit your students is if you have good relationships on behalf of the college with everybody that you need to work with to benefit students.
and balancing that with the vision, because as we talked at the end of the first half, the vision of serving all of our students, closing achievement gap, mm-hmm. making sure we understand all the different intersecting identities, but particularly our students from our marginalized identities, and recognize that sometimes our systems are set up to benefit students from more privileged identities, and how do we shift our programs, practices, policies to make sure they are truly equitable, have true success, and our mm-hmm. staff and faculty, full breadth of differences, really a place to thrive. How did I do extroverting a vision of an inclusive, equitable campus that could be bought in by most of the staff faculty at most campuses and universities you know about?
I think you did a great job. I think you did a great job of that. And I think sometimes, presidents, I'm going to say this, I have to meet with a lot of legislators and public officials about policies that are coming down the pike. And sometimes I'll hear presidents say it's difficult to communicate that message. And sometimes I agree with that, but really I think it's about connecting the dots, right? It's about everybody having the same opportunity to earn a family-sustaining wage. And it's really about economic development. It's about having the proper workforce. So I think it's sometimes the economic development people and the people that are talking a lot about economic development and the people that talk a lot about social justice are using very different language, but the outcome that they both are looking for is not that different. And if you can connect those dots for public policymakers, it's really helpful to everybody. And so that's something that we really, you know, as presidents really work on.
You really have, and that's one of the reasons I was so attracted to you, some capacities and skills that 35 years ago when I was in student affairs at a university campus, and I find folks that lead with social justice, racial justice, advocacy, activism, whether it's inside an organization of higher ed, K-12, or outside, mm-hmm. you're helping me see that senior leaders, but particularly presidents, may have capacities that along the way other folks could develop so that there are more bridges. I think we need folks that are just holding clear, talking about the changes that need to happen internally,
sure.
and externally.
Absolutely.
And, the bridgers, and maybe the presidents that are, I don't have your metaphor yet, spoke of the wheel. But what are some of the challenges and opportunities? You've talked about some, either in Oklahoma or other places.
Mm-hmm.
For presidents with all these constituencies, rural, urban, suburban, just where do you want to have that you haven't shared yet? Because there's so much.
I think what we're asking our faculty to do, which is meet every student where they are, is no different than what we have to step up and do ourselves, which is meet each constituency where they are. And we have to be the vehicle for communication to show communities, show different parts of our community that really our end goal is similar at a minimum and the same for the most part, which is we want people to have access to education, we want them to be able to complete their education, and we want them to be able to move on to a family-sustaining wage so that they can thrive and we can have what we call at TCC, our educated, employed, and thriving community. So it's about keeping your eye on the prize, and that doesn't mean that we don't need all types of communicators in the system, but you've got to have that catalyst to help everybody connect the dots so we can get closer to the same page.
We had a question come in from folks to say, so how do you measure success? And there are so many measures.
Mm-hmm.
But as you're asking staff, faculty, even students to measure their success, as you're working with your senior leaders and constituencies,
mm-hmm.
who might be funding or not based on success.
Right.
How do you measure success, especially with an EDI lens, a racial justice lens?
So it's pretty simple for us, and we're getting ready to complicate it a little bit more. But we use, and I'll just do a shout-out. I'm an Aspen Presidential Fellow, and we use the pillars of the Aspen Prize, and that is learning outcomes, completion, equity across populations, and finally, employment in our community. And so when they are assessing institutions as to whether or not they have achieved great things in their community, those are the things being measured. So that means you have to have a robust assessment system. That means that you have to get students into the college and out of the college for completion. That means you have to have pedagogy and programs in place that close the equity gap. And that also means that you have to have mechanisms whereby your students either get jobs or successfully transfer to a university upon completion of their program here at Tulsa Community College. So that's how we measure ourselves. We have not been able to master the employment piece. We have mastered the transfer piece. So we're working with our local economic development organization to try to master the labor market outcomes piece. But that's how we measure ourselves. And it's pretty simple. And when you look at that, it's about a family sustaining wage. And it's ultimately about economic development and everybody having that same opportunity.
Mm-hmm. And disaggregating all the data so that you're finding those points.
Absolutely.
And then, oh, wait, this department or this course we're noticing, and getting that data back so that folks can do the development intervention.
Right, and we're starting to have deans and faculty chairs and even individual faculty that want their own data disaggregated so that they can see what they need to do in their individual classroom to be more inclusive.
How much are campuses looking at the workforce, corporations, family businesses, nonprofits, K-12? Because what I know in my work is we can graduate folks that have EDI skills, that have a capacity to work in diverse teams, mm-hmm. serve with a lens of serving the full folks they're here to serve, and yet they get into organizations, workplaces that are still very early in their development and have lots of microaggressions, supervisors that can't create inclusive teams. So do you think presidents are thinking, workforce development, we need to be working with our top 50 employers or 10 employers to help them develop the skills, same skills that we're teaching our staff mm-hmm. and faculty?
You know, I would say we haven't gotten that far here at TCC, and I love the direction you're going. Tulsa itself, I think in large part due to the commemoration of the race massacre, so trying to have some good things come out of something that was really bad, right? We've really, as a community, I would say, embraced DE&I in a way that might not have otherwise happened. And our chamber leads efforts on it. Our larger corporations definitely lead efforts in that space. And I think for us, it's important that we have parallel programming for our students so that they have the opportunity to enter into the workforce with some knowledge and some ability to go into whatever practice they're going in with the ability to work with a diverse workforce. But I would say in terms of, let me understand, you're kind of making me think, like, is there a co-curriculum? Like, are we working? You know, we haven't engaged at that level, but I love that idea. I love that idea, Kathy O'Bear.
Well, even as we're doing programming around the Tulsa Race Massacre, which, as many mm-hmm. people know, is part of, I think they call it Red Summer, but it was like several years
absolutely yeah.
of just horrific KKK, white supremacist violence, domestic violence. And could you imagine if there's talking points that say, great, you all came to this program. Here are the three career-ready competencies mm-hmm. that this program will help you address. And so you're doing it internal, You're getting your staff and faculty to start talking about career-ready competencies, community leader competencies, and I actually think it's a way to continue all the different ways that you work with constituencies, but it may be a way there could be resources coming back.
Sure.
CCC that can fund scholarship or whatever, but there's so many small...
I love the collaborative idea. Absolutely.
If you all have people you ever want to talk, I'll just throw in a let's brainstorm because I could then, it just came to me. But it could be a way that you all are continue to serve the community. We just have maybe 10 minutes left. I have two things. I mean, there's so many things I want to talk about.
One, I know. You sent me so many questions. We're only getting through like four of them. I talk too much.
No, it's just what happened. Transformation or change. What are some structures, especially if you can move into accountability? I'm finding most campuses are moving in that direction of expectations as well as how will we develop but hold people accountable. So what are some transformational long-term structures so that there is a DEI change pathways? And folks that don't know, it's guided pathways. You can just Google that.
Right. Guided pathways. There's a movement out there with guided pathways. There's several hundred schools that are actively engaged in it. I would say most schools are at least starting the process if they're not deeply into it already. I would say any kind of transformational change, whether you're trying to close the equity gap or have your fiscal infrastructure look different or any kind of long-standing change, and certainly guided pathways, which really focuses on closing the equity gap, you hear that it takes about 10 more like 15 years for it to stick. You make all these cultural changes of really focusing not just on to college, but to and through, and not just making sure they get through the first year, but making sure they finish. And that's a tall order for community colleges as open access. Remember that most community colleges are open access institutions. And so we receive as they are, and we try to surround them with instructional benefits that help them get to and through. That kind of transformational change to really change the purpose of the college, because when we started community colleges long ago, it was about access, and now it's about access and completion, and the four Aspen principles of excellence, and so, which we talked about earlier. I would say leadership is really important, and not just at the president's level, but really at the team level, the executive team, the cabinet, whatever you call it at your school. I had a mentor that he was actually my VP of student affairs when I was a student at Oklahoma State University. It was Dr. Ron Beer, and he's a delightful person. He's retired now, but I have lunch with him maybe once a year, right? I drive over to Stillwater and have lunch with him. And I was getting ready to start this role, and I said, tell me your number one secret. And he said, Lee, I think about talent all day, every day. Mm. He said, I think about my team. I think about the professional development that they're engaged in. I think about what kind of mentoring I've done with them. I think about where they are on our agenda, and do I need to bring them along further? Or are they pretty far on our agenda, and can they help me bring others along? And so I think as the president, you aren't running the college. You're making sure the college is running, right? Other people are actually running the college, and so making sure that you have succession planning in place, that you have some long-term stability at the leadership level, and that means you being an excellent mentor and teacher yourself. So I still consider myself an educator, and my students are just really varied in age, and it's a different classroom. So.
And keeping in mind, again, all the competencies, capacities folks need to reach that vision of equity inclusion, closing the gap, graduation. Therefore, I love it. And then getting all the folks that you then supervise, mentor, to have people first, team first. because not everybody has that student affairs background and might come in.
Right. Sometimes it's only the student affairs officer that's really keeping DE&I, equity gap, rural, urban, top of mind, right? And it's got to be broader than that or you won't be able to move forward.
And building that into expectations, competencies, better in performance, mm-hmm. couple times a year meeting with your team, what progress
right.
have you made, and four-year in the universities have the resources to tie performance to then what monies come back to the division for different things. I'm not sure community colleges have that.
Community colleges don't generally aren't set up that way through their financial infrastructure because our students are a little more fluid in their journey.
So what I love about as you've just shared so much about what it means to be a president, kind of what you think about,
mm-hmm.
folks that are thinking of managing up and
mm-hmm.
how do we make sure EDI, racial, social justice is a part of. My hope is you all heard some ways to bridge to the then.
Right, you're really talking, economic development and social justice, the end outcome of a family-sustaining wage is not that different. There are differences. I'm not trying to simplify it, believe me. There's a lot in common. There's a lot in common, and it really helps the conversation.
Could you imagine if top leaders and all their social, racial justice folk on a campus that might be the ones that might be the more pushing types came together to say, what is our common vision? And not, this is ours. But just what are we each, and then how do we, and then how do, I could imagine that could be change management.
Where I've really seen that conversation come together is here locally with our Chamber of Commerce.
Hmm. Could you, that's even broadening, Chamber
right.
of Commerce.
I think what's really happening is from a corporate standpoint, people are understanding that a diverse workforce is more productive and that, that helps.
That business and leadership case.
Mm-hmm.
People who are listening from other types of organizations, but K-12 and community colleges, technical colleges for sure. People that are more R1 universities may have a broader reach, but I think you can still pull some ideas from what we're talking about. Final question. If someone were an aspiring president, vice president now, or maybe
mm-hmm.
they're coming from a different track, any final advice for folks that see that in 2, 3, and with all the retirements that are happening at presidents, it might come a lot faster. But what's your advice for new or aspiring folk?
And by the way, I anticipate a lot more retirements from COVID. I hear some of my friends that are a little bit older than me, and they're just like, wow, this has been exhausting. And so I think we'll see a lot of retirements over the next 5 years. I would say the power of yes. When you're given an opportunity to do something, I would say be that person that says yes, if you can. You don't want to completely overload yourself, and we always know the most productive person is the person that you want to ask to do something. But get as many different types of experiences as you possibly can. I know our CFO here at Tulsa Community College, he was getting, right before the pandemic hit, he was getting ready to really embark on some better understanding of both the student affairs and academic affairs areas through some professional development and attending conferences, and I think he'll probably engage in some of that virtually going forward. But he just wants to know more, so I would just say keep saying yes to those opportunities to learn and vary your learning. Don't just stay in your lane in terms of what you're trying to learn. When you hear about something interesting, say, I want to learn more about that. Is there an opportunity to do that? And they may say, well, absolutely there is, and give you an example. And I would say get involved in the community.
Mm.
Absolutely. You, if you aspire to be a president, You will need to be able to have people that are in the community say that you're engaged in the community, and that that is a positive thing. And so definitely diversify your network.
Mm-hmm. Fundraising, so advancement, as well as maybe relationship with legislatures.
Relations, fundraising, change management, strategic planning, board relationships. It's all very diverse.
My listeners are probably like, I need a breath. And not just presidents. I think senior leaders need.
Senior leaders also.
Managers. So.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Thank you so much. As we close, so appreciate all the wisdom and insights.
Yes, I've had a great time visiting with you, Dr. Kathy O'Bear. You always are able to facilitate a wonderful conversation.
Thank you, Dr. Lee Goodson. Could you just let people know how they can contact you if they want to maybe have you do something?
Absolutely. If they would like to learn more about what TCC has done through Guided Pathways or what our work has been, they can reach us at tulsacc.edu, and we'd be happy to share our experience.
I love it. Again, I'm Dr. Kathy O'Bear, Transformation Change Radio. You can find me at drkathyobear.com, lots of free resources, /resources. Look forward to next time where we'll continue this conversation about creating especially racial justice in organizations. Dr. Lee Goodson, thank you so much.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Dr. Kathy O'Bear on Transformation Talk Radio. Thanks for tuning in, and be sure to catch us next time as Kathy inspires listeners to become agents of change, motivate, innovate, and speak truth to power. Step into the courageous you that will change the world. Connect to life-changing conversations to extend your reach. For more information on Kathy and her work, please visit drkathyobear.com. That's drkathyobear.com.
The views expressed on this program are those of the host, guests, and callers, and not necessarily those of KKNW, its management, or other advertisers. Contests are the responsibility of the host of this program and not KKNW. This is Alternative Talk 1150 AM, KKNW Seattle, and KNUC 98.9 HD3 Seattle.
And good Wednesday to you. Benny Mathers here for a look at your Alternative Talk AM 1150 traffic update for Around the Town. And also happy Cinco de Mayo. Be safe out there tonight if you decide to experience some of the libations. Taking a look at the traffic situation, I-5 southbound just around, looks like, 128th Street southwest. That's I-5 southbound around the Painfield area in Mukilteo. South Everett, it's heavy, stretches all the way back to the 526. Everywhere else, though, traffic's actually looking pretty good. Hope everyone enjoys a safe Cinco de Mayo. Stay tuned. Coming up next, after the news and weather, it's another hour of the Dr. Pat Show. Talk Radio to Thrive By, being brought to you by the Transformation Talk Radio Network and Tequila Snobs. Well, of course, what better way to have that on today with special guest host Joan Marlowe and her guest, LaJuan Lennox. Stay tuned.
NBC News Radio, I'm Tom Robertson. A Facebook ban for former President Donald Trump will stand, at least for now. The social media giant's oversight board upheld the suspension, but added it must reconsider whether the ban goes indefinitely. Facebook oversight board director Thomas Hughes says the ruling helps safeguard freedom of expression.
Having an arbitrary penalty like that actually impedes and potentially affects freedom of expression rights for the users around the world.
Trump has ripped the ruling, saying his free speech was violated. President Biden is due at this hour to deliver remarks from the White House about the American Rescue Plan. Correspondent Peter Alexander has more.
Specifically within it, he's going to focus on the Restaurant Revitalization Fund, which allowed for roughly $28.6, almost $29 billion to be handed out to support restaurants that have been so badly hit.
Biden made an unscheduled visit to a D.C. restaurant earlier today to help make his point. Former President Donald Trump is endorsing Elise Stefanik to replace Liz Cheney as chair of the House Republican Conference. That's the third-ranking GOP post in the House. Wyoming's Cheney is on thin ice due to her ongoing criticism of Trump. He issued a statement from his Florida resort and called Cheney a fool. He said Stefanik is tough and smart. Peloton is agreeing to recall all of its treadmills following the death of a six-year-old. Sarah Lee Kessler reports.
Its voluntary recall, announced jointly with the U.S. Consumer Product Safety Commission, involves Peloton Tread and Tread treadmills. The CPSC said it had gotten more than 70 reports of people, pets, or objects being pulled under the rear of the treadmill.
Atlanta's Civil Service Board is reinstating a former police officer charged with shooting and killing Rayshard Brooks. The board granted the appeal of Garrett Rolfe because the city did not give him due process. Rolfe was fired the day after shooting Brooks in a Wendy's parking lot. You're listening to the latest from NBC News Radio.
Take a moment and rate your lifestyle on a scale of 1 to 10. 1 is a life that's nothing like the life you were promised after getting good grades, a college degree, and a good job in corporate America. 10 is the life of your dreams. If you answered anything less than a 10, tune into the Del Wamsley Radio Show. Del, self-made millionaire and founder of Lifestyles Unlimited, will show you how to live the life of your dreams and pay for it with passive income.
Tune in every Monday at 8 a.m., Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and Fridays at 5 p.m., and Thursdays at noon, right here on KKNW.
Let's go ahead and take a look now to alternative talk weather outlook for Wednesday. Well, after those morning clouds burn off, we'll see partly sunny skies today. High temperatures not looking too bad, around 71, 72 degrees. Tonight, increasing clouds, though. Low temperatures dropping down to about 53. For early Thursday morning and most of Thursday, actually, clouds and light rain showers. High temperatures scaling back to about 66. Clouds and rain will hang for Thursday night. Lows down to about 46. For Friday and running up into the weekend, more clouds and light rain showers expected. High temperatures in the upper 50s to low 60s.
The views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of KKNW, its management, or other advertisers. This program is sponsored by Dr. Pat McPhilly and Transformation Talk Radio.
Hi, welcome. This is Dr. John DeMartini. This is one of the most amazing and inspiring shows that you can listen into. If you want to be on the edge of your seats, if you want to open up your heart, if you want to expand your mind, and you want to meet incredible people, stay tuned because you're just about to experience a transformative radio show that will change your life. And you're listening to the Dr. Pat Show that's coming up right next.
Welcome to the Dr. Pat Show. Talk radio to thrive by. Powerful, inspiring, and coming to you live, bringing you stories of people like you and me, busting through and living life black. Get ready to dare to wonder what your life would be like if you knew you could not fail.
Good morning, I'm Joan Marlowe, and I am honored to have been asked to sub for Dr. Pat today for her show. And, yeah, the question is, you know, what would you do if you knew that no option was on the table that you were going to fail? Well, my guest today is one of those people as far as sticking to it and figuring out how to make it happen. And, again, my show is typically awareness to action. Typically, I am on first and third Tuesdays at 9 a.m. And my show is all about offering journeys, my guest journeys, towards living their life's purpose. So it's all about looking at that element. And I address 5 A's in every single thing we're doing. The first A, of course, is awareness. The last A is action. But what happens in the middle between that awareness and that action? One piece is acknowledgement. The other piece is acceptance. And it's all in a beautiful wrapper of authenticity. So those are 5 A's. So I hope you'll consider joining me and visiting some of the episodes that I've already done. And it's amazing how the universe presents information that's needed at that moment, at this moment in time. So not only was I provided the opportunity to have Dr. Pat's show today, being Cinco de Mayo, because my guest, Luann Lennox, is the founder of a business called Tequila Snobs. So how appropriate that she said, hey, we've got an available spot on Cinco de Mayo. So yesterday was part one, and today is part two. But again, the universe continued to share really cool information. So this morning, during my early morning mindfulness and meditation practice, the device that I'm using actually had the topic of creative play and creative fun. And I just smiled to myself because I know what's ahead for you folks as far as what Luann has to offer. And I am all about fun as well. My power statement is I'm open, honest, and fun. So if I can't be open, I can't be honest, I'm not going to have fun. I'm not doing it. So that's another reason why Luann is also a personal friend of mine. But what's even better is that during this practice this morning, information came to me. There was a Pablo Picasso quote that was used to wrap the whole session up. And it was something like, every child is an artist. The problem is how to remain an artist once he grows up. And it speaks to the fact that, again, if there was no option that you were going to fail, what would you do? The other thing would be you play with wild abandon as a child. There's no judgment involved. You are just living freely. So hopefully we can take you back to that world and in those thoughts through the help of Luann. So let me share a little bit about Luann. Luann Lennox is the founder of Tequila Snob and is very passionate about Mexico's favorite spirit, tequila. She's been doing in-person tequila tasting parties and corporate events for 8-plus years. She's been published in local magazines and newspapers online and in print. With the stay-at-home orders this past year, she created something she called Sipping in Place events. Virtually, Luann takes her guests through an enlightening and entertaining adventure surrounding the details and tastes of the beautiful agave spirit called tequila. She educates about the growing, harvesting, making, aging, and bottling of the Southwest's favorite beverage. And I bet it's a little more expensive than the Southwest. I'm a Jersey girl, so I think we have tequila there, too. She leads you to swirl and sip tequila as you would an exquisite cognac or scotch and enjoy the same as a rich Cabernet. She has converted countless tequila haters into tequila lovers because love conquers hate in all arenas of life. Her fun tagline is, become enamored, not hammered, with Tequila Snob. So yesterday's show was talking about her business, Tequila Snobs, and the obstacles that she faced, et cetera. So my hope is that you'll go back and listen to that. Today, we're fast-forwarding, and you're going to have an opportunity or a glimmer to look at what it's like to experience one of her virtual events, because today, we are going to be making a margarita. We offered up an opportunity for you to get your supplies ahead of time, but again, we can share that information with you later if you don't. But she and I are going to be making our margaritas, so we are ready to roll. And again, there's awareness around every corner, trust me. So get ready for this adventure. Again, I'm Joan Marlowe, and welcome Luann Lennox.
Yay. Thank you so much, Joan. Nice words.
Yes,
we're going to make margarita and make it virtually, and this is exactly what I do, but imagine me being one of those little squares, and then all your friends and family all around you in these little squares on a video, which of course can be people all over the world, all over the nation, or just across the street and your friends. Mm-hmm. But before we really dive right into making a margarita, certainly we have to talk about the fact that today is May 5th. It's so funny to me when people say, when is Cinco de Mayo? Like, Cinco means five, and of this day, and Mayo is May. So it's kind of like people asking, when's the 4th of July? Well, on the 4th day of July. When is Cinco de Mayo? It's on the 5th day of May. And certainly, I think, especially in the States, we get completely wrapped around it. Cinco de Mayo is a Mexican holiday, and it's when we drink tequila and when we celebrate with margaritas. And why is that? Because tequila and margaritas, of course, come from Mexico, and is Mexico's favorite beverage. But it kind of gets lost in the shuffle of what Cinco de Mayo really, why did and do the Mexicans celebrate. So I want to talk a little bit about that day. Like, God forbid that we only decorate with red, white, and blue stuff on 4th of July, we kind of know why it's celebrated. So the same as Cinco de Mayo. So I'm going to talk about that and that battle and such. Does that sound great?
Perfect.
Okay, so it was back a long time ago, I think Revolutionary War, just after that, or 100 years after that, in 1861 through 1862. The French and the Spanish, not Mexican, but the Spanish, the French, and a little bit of U.S. all managed and ran and were fighting to try to see who was going to get the area, Mexico, which of course included even Arizona and some of the lower states was included in Mexico at that time. And the French were over the managing director. Is that what happened back in the 1800s? I don't think so. So the big guy was Napoleon III. And he watched over the forces, and he's the one that put them to bat. And so the English, the Spanish, and the French all invaded Mexico. Well, eventually, the English and the Spanish got tired of it and kind of gave up a bit of the battle. But the Spanish under Napoleon were still, or sorry, the French under Napoleon were still really, really wanting to take control of Mexico. In addition to some wealthy landowners, they wanted Mexico, and they were still fighting. So General Ignacio, am I saying that right? In Spanish. I got to get better at my Spanish. Zargas, he got together a battle and a group of people, but it was mostly Latin American people that were descended from Latin America and the native Mexicans. So think indigenous people of Mexico, the Boxico. They all got together, and it was a very, very small, very weak, I shouldn't say weak, very small and a very under, they didn't have a lot of guns, didn't have the kind of stuff that the French had, and they went to war with the French. The French had about 10 times as many people and stronger guns. Just everything. They were way better equipped than the French and the Mexicans. However, in 1862, they won that battle. And that was on May 5th that battle won. Now, I say battle because it wasn't the war. The war continued. But there was this one battle considered the Battle of Puebla in 1862, and they won. They beat the French, even though they were way underdogs. They totally were not expected to win. So they won that battle. So in the city of Pueblo, they really, really celebrate with speeches and parades and reenactments. But truly, all of Mexico doesn't really celebrate Cinco de Mayo. However, us Americans, just like St. Patrick's Day, just like any holiday, we love it and embrace it like crazy. It's one of my busiest times of the year. It's a great, great reason to celebrate Mexico's favorite beverage, tequila, which, of course, in a margarita is tequila. So that's kind of where it all started. So it makes sense to celebrate making a margarita.
Mm-hmm. By all means. So can you take a couple of minutes and explain, where the tequila actually comes from? I mean, just the process of its journey to end up in a bottle?
Absolutely. In a few minutes, how about a few hours? There's so much fun to talk about with it. But tequila, of course, is made from the blue Weber agave. Has to be blue Weber agave. Can't call it tequila if it's made from any other type of agave. It has to be the blue Weber agave. And the agave, of course, my logo and my little guy in the background here, you can see him. The agave, massive, huge, big, big, big plant. Certainly they start up small, but they don't process those agaves till 8 to 12 years. That plant has to grow for 8 to 12 years before they will harvest that agave, before it's ripe enough and ready to be processed and to be used for tequila. So after that amount of time, and so what's the difference between 8 and 12 years is a big difference. Well, it depends on Mother Nature, the amount of rain, the amount of wind, the sunshine, the soil. There's so much that goes into the growing of these agaves. And, of course, the more expensive and the sweeter ones will come from the older, more mature agaves. Less expensive, cheaper tequilas often will use younger, not as mature agaves, but those are still 6, 8, 10 years old, as in not mature. So they dig up that agave and they chop all the picas off, which are the leaves, and what's left is this center, this massive, huge center, and that's called a piña. That center, think like an artichoke, is then baked in an oven. Now, another three-hour conversation, there's different ways that they bake these pinards. But the traditional way is to bake it in an oven. So think about an apple getting sticky and sweet as it's baked. And then that piña is then pressed. The juice comes out of it. They ferment that juice with a very, very special individual yeast. And every distillery has their own yeast. And that's what specifically dishes the different flavors and the different nuances. And then once it's distilled, once it's fermented, then it's distilled at least two times and put into a glass. When that happens, you get clear, beautiful, clear tequila. Or it's aged. Aged where? It's aged in a barrel. And there's lots that goes into the barrel aging and lots of different barrels and such. We'll talk a little bit more about that, but that's your choice. Either it goes straight into a bottle or the same juice is then rested in a barrel, which causes it to be reposado or añejo, depending on how long it's rested. Oh, my gosh, that was so much information.
Reposado is the younger, and añejo is the older.
It's aged, yes. And blanco is no aging, so it's absolutely the youngest. Blanco is the youngest with no aging. And then, yes, reposado is rested, and añejo is aged longer than reposado. And every company, every brand always has at least three kinds, has those three ages, those three age designations, always. And why does that matter? We're going to talk as we make our margarita. Different ones pair better with different types of margaritas, and we'll give you a different flavor profile. The thing is, what's the difference between white wine and red wine? They're different. You should be careful.
Well, as we get ready to go to break, I think you'll all agree that there's far more to tequila than you ever imagined. And Luann is a walking encyclopedia for this. And my hope against hope is that you're going to go away and not look at the tequilas, because I certainly did. My story that we'll tell in a little bit, you won't be looking at tequila the same way you've looked at it before. So that's very important as well. So let's take a moment and go on break, and then we are going to continue our journey towards making our perfect margarita with Luann. Thank you.
Welcome to Light Body Wisdom with internationally known light body whisperer, Grace Holmes. She will make you laugh and yawn as you release lifetimes of trauma and begin to feel much lighter. Your divine gifts may be activated, allowing you to weave light into the fabric of the world. Are you ready to be your own light and shine? For more information about Grace, visit gracegholm.com. That's gracegholm.com.
Take the power of essential oil healing to the next level with the Essential Light Insight Deck, containing 61 oracle cards. Each card holds a painting and message that captures the spirit of an essential oil. By drawing a card, you'll illuminate the spiritual healing capacity of plants and transform your day. For more information about the Essential Light Insight Deck and Gen Ripa, visit thriveology.com.
Hi, I'm Brittany Miles from Miles to Go, How to Lose to Gain It All. I have a mindfulness practice to help you face difficult emotions. It's called RAIN. Developed by Tara Brock, the letters mean the following. R, recognize what's happening to you. A, allow the situation to be as it is. I, investigate feelings with interest and care. And nurture yourself with self-compassion. So you see, RAIN isn't so bad after all. Tune into my show to learn more. See you on the 2nd and 4th Wednesday at 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern, here on Transformation Talk Radio. Feel free to reach out to me at miles2gocoaching.com. That's miles, the number 2, gocoaching.com.
Are you ready to shift your current beliefs about death?
From debilitating pain and loss? Follow Angie Corbett-Kiefer as she shares that through choice, present moment awareness, and keeping an open mind. Anything is possible, even in death. Tune in to Beyond Proof Radio with Angie, redefining death and loss every first Wednesday at 12 p.m. Pacific on TransformationTalkRadio.com. For more, visit BeyondProof.com.
Yes, we have to have fun. That was totally unexpected, as you saw on our faces. That was so wonderful. Thank you, thank you, thank you, Jacob and Benny, for helping us with that. That certainly made for the moment. Now we're in the mood. And as we come back from break, we now see that that Luann has a gorgeous, gorgeous sombrero on. And, of course, with everything with Luann, the sombrero has a story. So do tell.
My fun sombrero. I don't know how they wear these, though. Like, it's so big. Can't do anything in it.
I know. And she begged me not to have her wear it throughout the whole show. And
it's perfect. I'd like to wear it the whole time, but I think it'll mess up my agave squeezing. But, yeah, really, really beautiful. And this is a really legitimate, you know, a real one from Mexico. A very good friend of mine gave me these, and they were her grandpa. So I always have them just on my display back there. But what better day to sport them as today? So, yeah, beautiful, big and gorgeous, but I can't make a sensible margarita with it on.
No, you can't.
Sure. Now, this I can handle. How about I handle this one? Do.
Okay,
there.
Cool. Perfect.
Okay. There, like
this. No worries.
There. There, perfect. So, more importantly, let's talk, look at you guys as getting to know the real me now. I'm getting all crazy. Let's talk about making Mexico's favorite drink on Cinco de Mayo. If you're not going to just sip tequila straight, which is really higher-end tequila, is really what I would prefer you do, we're going to at least make the perfect margarita. Good plan. Okay. So the sweet, the sour, and the buzz. Super easy. You're home watching me. There's no one around. Say it out loud. The sweet, the sour, and the buzz. Those are the three ingredients and the only things you need for your margarita. That's it. Now I'm going to go a little bit out of order because we want to talk about the lime first. That's the sour. The sour. Now, I know you can get lime in this bottle, and on the back of the bottle, it'll say 100% lime juice. It's a lie. It doesn't work. I've tried it. I've bought it. And I looked at the ingredients. I actually had a really big event, and I needed to make a whole lot of margaritas. So I thought, well, this is 100% lime juice. It'll be okay. I bought it. It was horrible. So that night, then I ran to the store, and I squeezed 70 limes that night to make enough lime juice for my margarita. So I'm telling you, there's nothing like it. These are very inexpensive, and you've got to use a fresh, fresh lime. Now let's talk choosing the lime. And usually if I'm doing a tequila party or a margarita making party, I really have everybody show off their lime and we talk about it. And I know you're thinking lime, it should be green, but sometimes if it's a little bit yellow and a little bit sun-kissed, oh, Jones is perfect,
yeah.
That's actually better. And in my teeny tiny brain, I think it's hanging on a tree, and rather than it being totally green when they picked it, it was a little bit almost overripe. And if it's overripe, again, think any kind of fruit, what's that going to impart? It's going to be a sweeter, more easier, more juicy, more ripe, more sweet. It's always better. So little sun-kissed spot on it is okay, but above all, you also want to make sure, and I wish I had a bad one, and I don't, you want to make sure that the skin is very, very smooth. Sometimes when you look at your whole pile of limes that are there at the grocery store, you'll notice that they're a little bit bumpy, like almost like orange peel. And again, to me, it feels like they didn't grow as big as they could be. Like, they didn't grow into the skin, right? The skin is still a little bit loose, or it's just not stretched. So the shiny, smooth, stretched skin, again, have grown to full potential before they were picked. If you shop the same grocery store as I do, I have probably touched every single one of those lines that you have at home right now, because you also want to take and give them all a little squeeze. They should give a little bit, almost like a ripe peach or a plum. They should just, or a mango. They should give a little bit. They should be a little bit soft. So you see me messing around with this line, which I should have told you to be doing while I was gabbing. Take your line before you cut it, and you really want to roll it on the counter. If you have a white counter, it will stay in the counter. So you're better to put it on a cutting board and knead it. And just really what you're doing here is you are loosening the juice from the pulp. Joan is rolling. I can't see her.
I am rolling.
I can't see her. Can't see her board, but I'm thinking she's rolling beautifully.
Here's my board.
Okay, there's her board. Okay, so what you're going to do first is you grab your glass. Do you all have a nice rocks glass? Yes, yes. So this kind of glass is perfect. A margarita glass is okay, too. For a simple margarita, I always like just kind of a nice rocks glass. And you see I have, I'm going to explain my little insignia in a minute. Joan, your glass is perfect. So while you've got that glass, you're going to take one of the ends where the stem was, and just slice that off just a tiny, tiny bit, just enough to open it up and get to the flesh. But it's a teeny, tiny, little sliver. Then you're going to take that sliver, take your glass, and give it a rinse, that little piece. I've seen people do just water for this, but lime juice is super sticky. And that's the whole idea. If you want to dip your glass in salt or some sort of yummy rim. A lot of people say, I don't like salt. No salt for me. It makes me swollen or it's puffy or whatever. This is, have you ever heard of tahine? Tahine is a really neat, it's a little bit of chili spice and a tiny bit of salt. You can do that if you don't love the salt. But there's just something about that sensation when you press your lips up against the glass and you've got that little spicy or salty little flavor. So I highly recommend always rinsing the glass. Even if you're not going to take all the salt off of it, I just really recommend it. But I like this little red trend. It's kind of fun and kind of nice. So you want to do that and set it aside. I can't tell you how many times I put the ice in before I rim it. And I literally turn it upside down and drop the ice into my salt. What am I thinking? So make sure you do that. Okay. So you've got your other half. Correct. You've got the leftover line now. And you're going to take this and you're going to slice it in half, regular, like, doesn't matter, but lengthways. You're going to, there's my little end that was cut off, right? And I'm going to cut it this way. I don't know how to explain, but, just cut it in half. Cut it in half because we're going to squeeze it. And you'll probably notice as you cut it, there's a lot of juice running out already because you really smooshed it up. So take your shaker. Now, if we weren't talking so much and spending some time, I would say you'd have ice in your shaker already. But because we're going to take a little while and I'm going to go through this slowly, I mean, surely it should only take you 5-6 minutes to make a margarita. But because we're talking, you don't have any ice in this yet. But normal circumstances, you'd have the ice and you'd squeeze your lime right into the ice. So, you have your lime squeezer, yes? Somewhere?
Yep.
Pull that out. I'm going to use my big, big, big squeezer. And both of those pieces that you cut, you're going to squeeze both of them into your shaker. One. tweezer, which is great. Make sure you turn it sideways and really get the juice out. I'm not making any noise. All quiet. Okay, so, and because you don't have ice, you can really see. If you look in there, it's probably about an ounce. One lime will give you about an ounce of lime juice. So the sweet, the sour, and the buzz. And this was the sour. Ready to move on to the sweet?
I'm busy reading my notes from our producer. Okay, are we in a good place to do a break?
Who are you asking here, Luann or me? I'm down for whichever there.
Okay, all right.
So when I come back, we're going to talk about the sweet. Super important. There are many sweet choices, and some of them are really bad ones. And then there's perfect ones. So we'll be right back. We're going to talk about the second step, the sweet, sour, and the buzz. We're going to talk about the sweet.
Are you ready to put down that drink or drug for good? Are you struggling to maintain your recovery from addictive behaviors? Do you need help with a family member or loved one who's in early recovery or battling addiction? Get the help and guidance you need by arranging a recovery recharge phone session with me, Ellen Stewart, Pushy Broad from the Bronx, Certified Life and Recovery Coach. Call 1-800-889-1757. Make an appointment today or go to my website, pushybroadfromthebronx.com, and click on the link that says Recovery Recharged. Don't wait. Get the help you need today. This is Ellen Stewart, Pushy Broad from the Bronx, on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
Everybody, it's me, psychic medium Jamie,
and me, spirit walker Nicole. We are so excited to introduce you to our new live call-in show called Shades of Spirit on TransformationTalkRadio.com. As we connect you with your crossover loved ones, angels, and guides, and also help you develop your own psychic and healing abilities. For more information and to book your own private experience, go to ShadesOfSpirit.com and also follow us on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
How many times do you find yourself saying, it was nothing, or just doing my job, when really you knocked it out of the park? How did you get like this? Next time someone tells you, great job, you'll know how to accept it and not deflect it by listening to Courage to be Seen Radio with host Sherry Clark. Sherry Clark is an experienced global engineering leader, coach, and mentor. From her experiences one-on-one coaching to corporate consulting and executive coaching, Sherry has learned many women need at least three things to discover and face success. Learn about the ACES program, how to survive male-dominated fields with grace and authenticity, and reach the top without ever once giving up on who you are. Courage to be Seen host Sherry Clark explores the awesome power of your entire self and how far you can go by being more you. Check out her website, CourageToBeSeen.com. You have the courage to be seen. See you later.
Hi, I'm Mary Jane Mack, and I'm excited to tell you about the latest technology. It is new to this country, and it's just amazing. God of Germany. The Healy is state-of-the-art technology for improving and changing the body vibration. I have more information about the Healy on my website, MaryJaneMack.com, or you can call the office at 888-777-4232.
I
I love our music. It's great. So, hi, I'm Joan Marlowe, and this is Awareness to Action, and I'm covering for Dr. Pat, so I'm honored to be here. My guest today is Luann Lennox, and she's the founder of Fearless Knobs. And in honor of Cinco de Mayo, we are creating and making a perfect margarita. So, where we are at this point in time, we've got our lines all squozen. I guess it's frozen in our little mixers, and we're getting close to moving forward here. And now we're going to talk about the sweet, because Luann says it's the sweet, the sour, and the buzz are the three essentials of any margarita. So here we go.
Yes, not only the essentials, but the only ingredients you need. So the sweet, the sour, and the buzz. The sour, of course, was easy. That was your perfect line. The sweet. In many margaritas, you'll see sweet and sour mix. You'll see Cointreau or an orange liqueur. To me, as we know, tequila is made out of the Blue Weber agave. So it makes sense to me. They pair really well. What grows together, blends together really well in a drink is agave syrup, 100% agave syrup. Tequila is made out of an agave. Agave syrup is perfect. There's lots of different agave syrups out there. This is one that I really like just because it's thin. But you want one that's pretty thin. I think about something if it's thick like honey, then when you put it in a drink with ice, it's going to coagulate a little bit, right? So I like the ones that are thin. This one is actually found with the mixed drink area where the margarita mixes and so on are, as opposed to where the sugar is or where the honey and the agave nectar is. So this is agave syrup. One of my favorites. So this is the sweet portion. The sweet, the sour, and the buzz, this is the sweet piece. But as I talked about mixes, I do want to mention one little thing. You can buy a mix in a bottle, right? Right? You can buy these kind of mixes. And it says just add tequila. It's perfect. This mix, first ingredient, water. Second ingredient, high fructose corn syrup.
Ooh.
Then there are 10 more ingredients that, honestly, I can't pronounce, except for the last one, which is yellow color number 5. That's all that's in this. Don't do it. Don't do it. This is a headache waiting to happen. This is promised headache. Promised headache. I'll put that on the camera. So, sweet, the sour, and the buzz. That's all you need. So you're sweet. Let's crack open your little agave syrup. And remember, the sweet, the sour, and the buzz, with it being sweet, you can always add a little bit more, but you can never really take it out. So the sweet and the sour are equal parts. So if you're doing a pitcher, you do half a pitcher of sweet, half a pitcher of sour. If you're doing a drink, then it's one shot of lime juice, which is about one fresh lime, and one shot of sweet. However, disclaimer, I always do a little less. I personally like mine not as sweet, and it's going to be lower calories and lower sugar, but it should be equal parts. But I go a little light, and then once I drink it, if it's too sour, you can add a little more sweet in. You can never take it out. So we did a shot of lime, and I'm going to do a little less than a shot of agave syrup. There you are with the sweet. Now, we're going to move on to the buzz. Three guesses, the first two don't count. What's the buzz?
Tequila.
Tequila, indeed. Now, there's a bunch to know about tequila, and I talked to you about the different designations and the different ages when we started. Ideally, if you are doing just a straight-up fresh margarita, I like to use a very young tequila, which is a Blanco. You don't want to use a really expensive tequila that's been aged, and they put all this time and effort into all these beautiful little honey and oak and cinnamon nuances, and then you're just putting lime and agave syrup in it. Where a Blanco is really strong, agave forward. What does agave taste like? Kind of grassy and herbal, and so you want it to... you want to use a Blanco, ideally. However, I like to use a Reposado sometimes, too. Reposado, and you can get less expensive Reposado, and that would be a little bit more gold one. But if it says gold on the label, don't buy that. that they're just saying gold. What they mean is they added gold color. But it's gold because it takes the color out of the barrel because it's been aged. But a reposado will say reposado. It won't say gold on it. How do I tell a good bottle of tequila and a bad bottle of tequila? Super simple. If you forget everything about this, this one tiny little thing you'll remember. Make sure somewhere on the label it says 100% agave. You'll see them, they say made of agave, with Blue Weber agave, a lot of agave in here, but it won't say 100% agave unless it is 100% agave. And anything less than 100% agave means that it's only 51% agave, and the other 49% is high fructose corn syrup, any kind of filler, brown sugar, sucralose, glycerin to make it feel more silky in your mouth. All of that, again, headache. All that equates to headache. So you just want to make sure it says 100% agave. Joan, what do you have?
So, well, yesterday when I was in my liquor cabinet pulling out my proper tequilas, and through my world of life with Luann and experiencing tequila tasting with her, I have a whole new appreciation. So I do have sipping tequilas as well. But again, when she's saying about the light part, one of the tequilas that I pulled out was clear. It was a Jose Cuervo Especial Tequila Silver, and it said it's made with blue agave. Now, what was your response immediately?
Indeed, they're not lying. It is made with blue agave. But how much? Yeah. By law, it only by Mexican law and for the distilleries, it only has to be 51% agave. And certainly it's way cheaper for companies to put fillers in, to put grain alcohol, to put sugar, to put headaches into the cheap tequila. All of you that raise your hand and say they had that horrible experience with tequila, more than likely you were younger, you had less money than you have now, and you all pulled your dollars together and you bought the cheapest, largest gallon jug of tequila that you could find. And that was wine that had a lot of fillers, and that's the one that made you swear tequila off and never drink tequila again because you remember that horrible, horrible,
The days after it was still hanging. So the other two that I happen to have in my cabinet was a Corralejo 99,000, which is an añejo. It says 100% de agave. And her first comment was, that's expensive tequila to use in your margarita, but okay, that was a choice. And then my other one, and again, she taught me all kinds of things about the label, and then my last one that I had was an 1800 Reposado. And this one was a gift easily 20 years ago for house sitting when I still lived back in Virginia. And so it was aged then, so now it's even aged more. So this is like really special occasion stuff, but it's a Reposado nonetheless. So any comments about those? And then we're gonna cut to a break.
Okay. What I'll say about the añejos and the Reposados, the ones that are aged, think about a red wine. So they're more aged. They taste more like honey. That oak is in there, more wood-type flavors. Those type of tequilas blend really well with maybe a blackberry or a strawberry, maybe a strawberry basil or a blackberry sage type of margarita, where the one that we're making is just straight-up lime and the sweet, and those blend better with a blanco, or like cucumber or jalapeno. If you're doing those type of muddles in a margarita, those work really well with the blancos. But if you think about those warmer type of tequilas, they work better with the more aged tequilas. If you're making that kind of a warmer kind of margarita. When we jump back, we're going to mix this, we're going to shake this, and I'll talk about how to do those strawberries and blackberry margaritas and how to add on all of them.
Because if you go away with nothing else, you're going to go away with a new appreciation for what a margarita can be. It doesn't necessarily have to be this traditional margarita that we're making. And for some of us, we might not be able to, the lime doesn't do us well. So there are other opportunities for us out there to look at the expansiveness of what margaritas could be. So on that note, let's take a break. And we'll come back and actually get to our shaking portion of the session.
Listen up. The wealth you receive is a result of your personal relationship with the soul of money, meaning your spiritual well-being affects your ability to create abundance. Jennifer Bloom works with people to mend the spiritual disconnects that block up the cash flow. How's your relationship with yourself? Are you in balance with the divine? I know, these are big questions, but there are answers. Take Jennifer's free money relationship quiz to learn where you need to focus your energy and watch yourself grow into the abundance you deserve. Trust the divine. Learn to receive. You are worthy of all the wealth you seek. Visit JenniferBloom.com and click on the purple banner to take the free money relationship quiz. That's Jennifer Bloom, BLOOME.com.
In a roundabout of dysfunction, stop circling around difficult issues and find out what's been holding you back. Learn how to speak your truth to power with host Dr. Kathy Ober. Create real change with smart tools and smart strategies. No frills, no fluff, just life-changing conversations to help get you where you want to be. Extend your reach and become an agent for real change with Kathy Ober. For more information on Kathy and her work, please visit drkathyober.com. That's drkathyober.com.
A word of caution. If you prefer the status quo and you are not interested in improving every aspect of your life, this book will trigger the shift out of you. The Truth is Funny, Shift Happens is available now. Author Colette Steffen brings the powerful knowledge and life-changing energy and empowerment from the radio airwaves to the pages of her new book. To get your copy in paperback or e-book, visit thetruthisfunny.com today.
Tune in to The Jen Royster Show, intuitive guidance to inspire your life, each Thursday at 8 a.m. Pacific and 11 a.m. Eastern on TransformationTalkRadio.com. This amazing show is an inspirational hour that will take you on an epic metaphysical journey to discover the spiritual approach to life's greatest challenges. Dr. Jen is an internationally known intuitive counselor, spiritual teacher, and energy healer. Call in for intuitive readings and visit JenRoyster.com for more information.
And just think, it's always 11:45, and here at least Pacific Coast time, so the East Coasters are already playing.
Don't we usually follow that up that it's 5 o'clock somewhere? So, alrighty then.
It's 5 o'clock somewhere, so let's all celebrate. Okay, so back to Luann. So far, we've covered our sweet and our sour, and now we go to the buzz.
The important piece, the buzz. And I've talked about the different ages of the different tequilas, and I'm going to use a reposado. I think Joan,
I will
use for añejo. So the sweet, the sour, and the buzz. And again, normally you will have your ice in your bucket. We didn't put the ice in yet, but so far in your shaker, you should have the sweet and the sour equal amounts. So let's pretend you had already put the ice in, but let's put some ice in now. How's that loud noise?
Authentic. We need authenticity.
Yeah, sound effects are great. These are natural.
That's my ringtone, actually, the sound of ice cubes. So you've got some ice in your shaker.
Yes, ma'am.
And so we did the sweet and the sour. equal parts, and then double the buzz. Pretty easy to remember. So an ounce of sweet, an ounce of sour, and 2 ounces of buzz. Or a cup of sweet, a cup of sour, and 2 cups of buzz. So it's 2 to 1, always. Super simple. And it's 11 o'clock in the morning, and I'm pouring tequila. And the intention is to drink. It's crazy. But it's 5 o'clock somewhere, right?
Okay.
So there it is. So you've got the sweet, the sour, and the buzz, double the buzz, and ice. Now, before you get crazy and start shaking, remember your glass way back so long ago that you rimmed so beautifully? Drop some ice right in there. New, fresh ice.
Got it.
And fill it. Beautiful. Okay, so you've got your glass full.
Yep.
You've got your sweet, your sour, and your buzz, and some ice. Oh. If you've got little holes in the top, make sure you put this. This is the fun part, and imagine you and all of your friends on a screen, all of you shaking and dancing at the same time. I'm sorry I don't have some crazy fancy dance. I guess I should. But you're going to just shake until it feels very, very, very cold. So let's go all together.
5 o'clock somewhere.
Feel cold?
Very cold.
Okay. Now, sometimes, if you've got to take that cap off, you'll see bartenders really smack it. The truth is, I'm not a bartender. Never had any of that training. I just know how to make a very pure, perfect margarita. So take your little cap off, or whatever you're doing, or separate it, or whatever.
There we go.
And you're going to drop that right into your glass. Ooh, I can lock this one. Now, if you're making this along with me, and you use the Blanco, you're going to notice that your drink is a little lighter. Right? Joan and I both use a darker tequila, so it's going to be a little more yellow. But if you're using a Blanco, of course, it's going to be more clear. Ours is going to be a little more honey flavor, a little more oak. And if you're using it with a Blanco, you're going to notice more citrus forward and more agave. So there it is. Tiny little thing, and I don't have it right here. I have it in my fridge. If you want to add a little splash of soda water to this, it makes it really refreshing and really nice. This sounds crazy, but if it's nighttime and it's cold here in Arizona, if it's getting like down into the 60s, I like to drink it like this. But if it's warm, if it's hot out, and you want it a little light and a little citrusy, you can add a little soda water in. Now, one way to make sure that your drink is always really, really good tasting is to charge your glass. How do you charge your glass? You hold your glass up, you toast to the person that you love and the person that you're with, and you say salud. So here we go.
Salud. Salud.
Let's have a sip. If it's a little too tart, add a little more of your sweet.
Yummy.
If it's a little strong, you can drop a little more water in it, but it should be clean and fresh and just taste really good. That fresh lime and a little bit of the tequila flavors in there, but not too much.
And I think that is what makes the difference. When you have the sweetener that they use, it's that thicker taste, and I wouldn't have noticed that unless we were talking about this just now.
Right.
So it's really, really light, really, really.
And a lot of those sweeteners that you can buy give you they hurt in my throat, or they'll give me heartburn. And you're not going to get that with just a straight up sweetener like agave syrup.
Yep.
Well, this is fabulous. We're getting to the close of the end, towards the end of the show. And before we go, first of all, I want to say thank you to Luann for taking this time on her very, very busy day. Cinco de Mayo is her national holiday all the time. This is better than Christmas, 4th of July, birthday, all rolled into one in her world. And again, it's all about awareness to action. And it's looking at, hopefully you've heard something here that you're going to move into action, possibly start squeezing your own lines. You're never going to look at a line the same way when you go to the grocery store. You're never going to look at a bottle of tequila the same way. And so Luann, quickly. You told me you were going to share, so this might not be the best today. What are some other things we can do with this?
Oh, yes. If you ended up, and sometimes you'll get stuff like that as a gift. And I'm like, really? What am I going to do with this? You can cook with it. I cook with my lower quality tequila a lot of times because, of course, it's got sugar in it. So if you saute shrimp or you soak shrimp in it or your fish, it blends really well with seafood before you grill it, before you put it on the stove. There's that's what I use any of my tequilas that I've ever gotten as a gift. It's got a little bit of sugar in it. Perfect, because it'll caramelize it a bit.
Excellent. Full service here. Okay. So before we head out, Luann, how can people find you?
I would love you to hang out on my Facebook page, Tequila Snob. There's more than one of us, Snob, with an S, on Facebook. Tequila Snob Community on Facebook is a group where we just all get together and talk and share ideas. I will let you into that. Tell me how you found it and jump in there. Tequila Snob Events, more talks about what I do and the different events that I do, the corporate events that I could do, and the in-home parties, as well as these type of virtual parties that I can do. And then Instagram as well, Tequila Snob. Same. Pretty easy to find. If you want to write me a note, I love notes. TequilaSnobs@gmail.com. Pretty easy. I'm pretty much everywhere, but it's Tequila Snobs.
And she is. So the offer that she's providing our listeners and our followers is to send her an email and request the opportunity to do a Zoom virtual. It would be very, very similar to what you experienced today. So please, open this up to your friends and your family all over the country, all over the world, it doesn't matter. And, of course, if you are here locally with us in Arizona, in the Maricopa Pinal County area, by all means, you can consider now possibly doing an in-person event because we're somewhat open. So, again, thank you so much for being here and joining me. I'm Joan Marlowe. The show is Awareness to Action. My business is called Peaceful Easy Healing. I'm a life coach. Life and wellness coach and a Reiki master, as well as an educator. Education first in my life. And you can find the information about me at peacefullyhealing.com. And I certainly look forward to seeing you on my regular show, which is the first and third Tuesdays of every month at 9 a.m. Pacific time. So thank you so much. Again, salud to you. Salud out there. Have a great Cinco de Mayo. Be safe. That's first and foremost, but also be smart now when you're out there shopping for all of your ingredients for your wonderfully delicious, perfect margarita that's not going to give you a hangover. Mm-hmm.